Okay, I think we'll get started with our next session. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. I'm pleased to welcome to the stage John Nallen. He's the Chief Operating Officer of Fox Corporation and is a member of the Office of the Chairman. In that role, he has a wide array of responsibilities across the entirety of Fox and is well known to the investor community. John is credited with being the architect of one of the industry's most significant transactions, the Disney 21CF merger, and the resulting spin-off of Fox. Prior to that, the March 19 spin-off, John was the CFO of the predecessor, 21st Century Fox, and overall, he's a 25-year veteran of some version of Fox and News Corp. So, John, thank you for being here once again.
Thanks for having us, Drew.
So the spin of Fox happened about 6 months ago. You held an investor day about 4 months ago. As you look back on the original thesis underlying the new Fox, is this thesis still intact? And given the rapidly changing environment and consolidating media markets, tell us about Fox's strategy and how you plan to drive growth and value. It's a big question. It's a simple question.
Yeah, nice way to start. But it's interesting, just as we approached here, the rapidly changing element of that, I think, will be thematic as we go through this discussion, because, I mean, just in the last 2 weeks, the kinds of things that have happened are pretty significant in the industry. But, you know, coming back to the theme, the thesis of Fox, it, you know, it was born back at the transaction a couple of years ago when, you know, Rupert had this famous quote, which was that we were pivoting at a pivotal moment. I think that's still very much true. We held an investor day. We had 1,000 participants in it, spent 5 hours. Most of you were there. But the themes that come out of the thesis are, you know, we're focused on appointment television for mass audiences led by big brands: Fox, Fox News, Fox Sports, Fox Stations. And we're investing heavily in those brands. If I go back through that period of time, you know, we extended our relationship with Major League Baseball out to 2028. In 3 weeks' time, we'll launch WWE on Fox, having it move over to the broadcast side. We continue to expand our local TV station news business, and we're getting behind a lot of our new entertainment assets, most notably investing in things like Masked Singer on air and off air. The investment really continues to be twofold. One, out of the thesis, was continuing to drive growth, subscription and advertising revenue. It's roughly, our business is pretty simple, 50/50 right now, generally between advertising and subscription. And then the second element, though, of the investment is how do we expand our brands outside of just linear channels? Things like Fox Nation, Fox Bet, Credible Labs. These are extensions that come out of the investments that we're making into it. And we're able to sustain these investments and grow the business and allocate our capital wisely because we've got a hell of a balance sheet and a really strong cash flow generation. I mean, our EBITDA to free cash flow conversion is very strong. We're not very capital intensive, and we've got a tax attribute that stays with us for 15 years. Came out of the transaction to help reduce the tax burden of the company. So we've got a really healthy cash flow generation against our peers. But I think the overarching point of the theme, and we made it on the investor day, was against our peers, and even for us, given what we've gone through for the last decades, is it's a simple company, right? We're U.S. only. I don't wake up now at night thinking about Brexit and the Indian economy and yet another Italian government. You know, these were issues that I would worry about in the old context. We've got very big partners on the advertising and distribution side, and very big partners on the programming side. And we've got just a super management team. So, yeah, going back to the original pivot, I'd say the thesis is intact. It will evolve, there's no question. And clearly, we've made slight changes as we've gone through it. But yeah, I'd say we're still right in the line of sight from where we were.
Yeah, let me jump off of that. You mentioned a couple of recent initiatives over the past couple of months. Scaling up Fox Nation is one. the launch of FOX Bet and the associated investment into the Stars Group. And then the third one is the pending acquisition of Credible Labs. So maybe we can attack each of those in sort of turn, and maybe let's start with Fox Nation and sort of what's going on there in terms of scaling up that business.
So I think you can contrast the three of them to where they are in their life cycle, but ultimately know that our objective is to reach a really at-scale business. Right? We're not into any one of these to have a little bit of success. We're in here to create really big businesses out of them. So if you take Fox Nation, the market exists, right? We're not waiting for a market. It's now execution for us to develop more content for Fox Nation and to actively seek out that subscriber base and grow it. We're in the middle of that now. We're dialing up the marketing of Fox Nation to that audience. We're obviously using a lot of on-air at Fox News, since that's the best audience. We'll move off that soon enough to get scale there. But the market is there. If I go to, you go to Fox Bet, for example, we launched in just over the last couple of weeks, two states, New Jersey and Pennsylvania. And that market will be very significant, but it's not there yet. All right, so we have an early entry into the market, great brand, and we think we've got, with TSG, a great position to grow that business. And then in the middle is Credible, where you've got, and you're right, the acquisition's pending, so I don't want to talk too much about where we are on it. But you've got a market for consumer digital finance that's growing. It's not nascent in the case of Fox Bet, but it's not as mature as the Fox Nation audience is. And Credible's got a great name inside of that. So we're able to attach to the growth of Credible to begin with, and secondarily, our audience is growing, providing our audiences to help the business grow even faster. So I think the three of them, you have to look at different maturity cycles. They'll grow at different levels, but ultimately they'll each be big businesses for us.
Yeah. I think with the Credible acquisition, I think, you know, some investors maybe didn't quite get it at first, just sort of the, you know, what is this? You know, this is a consumer loan platform. How does that exactly fit into what Fox is doing? You know, maybe you could just elaborate a little bit on how you see what opportunity you see there.
Yeah, I've had a number of discussions with investors around this. So I have this internal visual I refer to the Investor Day, and I continue to have, of a Venn diagram around new sports and entertainment. And if you look at us from a capital allocation standpoint, you know, right in the center are the obvious. We've made no bones about the fact that we'd like to expand our television station distribution footprint in this country. Bang, do that, everyone nods, got it, right? So you move out into the sports adjacencies and you see something like Fox Bet. Okay, kind of a big blip on the radar screen for people to see. Okay, it makes sense. They did it once before with Sky, right? And there's a market and an audience that's growing in America. Great. And then, you know, Credible Labs is still inside the diagram. The blip may not be as heavy and deep as Fox Bet or some other things we're doing, like Bento Box, some other acquisitions we made. But it's a business that's tied to our engaged audience. People too often look at our content, Fox Sports, and say, okay, Fox Sports, Fox Bet. But one of the big assets we have are tremendous mass audiences. And for us to be able to optimize that through Credible is the opportunity for us.
Yeah. It's funny, when you announced that acquisition, I knew nothing about it, probably like a lot of investors, but it is public down in Australia. And I took a look at the annual report. You look at their gross margin, it was last year, and it had plummeted. Oh, why is that? That's kind of strange. They have text. Oh, look at that. They decided to start amping up their marketing. They started using television advertising, mm-hmm. and subscriber acquisition is one of their biggest costs. Oh, I think I know somebody that has some ad inventory that might be able to help.
Yes. You'll see competitors, a lot of Credible advertising on competitors as well.
Yeah. I think it's a trend that we're starting to notice, you know, where I think companies that have big audiences, engaged audiences, and that's a tremendous asset, right? Especially as audiences in general are fragmenting. So if you can still have that scale, it's even more valuable and more important.
Yeah, and
I think you're trying to think of other ways to monetize
absolutely.
That as opposed to just driving price on the CPM.
Right, and there has to be some engagement, some tangible engagement hook to the business you're acquiring. And clearly the Fox News audience, our local station audience, and now that we're entering a revamping of Fox Business, there is a direct linkage between what Credible is doing and what we're doing around
yeah.
the company.
So, I mean, I think is the message to investors that you guys will continue to look for these types of adjacencies and these types of opportunities going forward. I mean, I think what people worry about a little bit is this is not that big of an acquisition relative to your balance sheet or your cash flow. I mean, it's probably less than 10% of your annual free cash flow.
Mm.
Will you be willing to scale up for the right opportunity, or are there any sort of parameters that you can put around as you explore more of these adjacent opportunities?
No, I think they're each opportunistic. You know, we spent a lot of time looking for over the 2-year period while we waited for Fox to come in, looking for opportunities. The obvious ones I've talked about, the ones that aren't so obvious are pretty hard to find. So it's not like on my desk or on Steve's desk there's a stack of, you know, things we're ready to jump on right now. We're going to be really disciplined about how we go forward here. And I think, look, that was the case with Fox Bet as well. Finding an opportunity where we could help drive that business in just so many ways. If you think about it, we have the opportunity to acquire an equity interest in Fox Bet over the next 7 years at cost as that business scales. We estimate that the sports wagering business legalized in the country by 2023, 2024, be an $8 billion business, 70% of it digital. Great for us to be involved in that. In the interim, we get brand licensing fees. The place where this will explode, and it's true for all of our local station operators, is at the local level. There will just be massive advertising as there's competition for market share as these states roll out licensing there. We've got the 4.9% interest in TSG, so we get a ride at the upstairs company as the growth in the market occurs. And I think, you know, it's sort of like Credible, but the place that people miss is as wagering increases in America, and we hope it's disciplined and, you know, done well and that there aren't issues out of it, the engagement level that flows back to our linear programming is very significant. I mean, we put out an app, Fox Sports Super 6, that I even played last Sunday. You know, 6 games, you pick where you're going to be, just like the old ones. Hey, all of a sudden I'm interested in a game that I wouldn't particularly be interested in. And you know, the opportunity linked to Fox Sports out of wagering is not a one-legged opportunity. It's massive.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's... You would guess this anecdotally, but we had a consultant do some survey work around this, and when somebody is wagering on a game, 83% are very likely to watch the game.
Yeah,
yeah, it makes perfect sense. You know, I know it just launched. I think New Jersey launched early September 1st or something like that, and Pennsylvania maybe a couple of days or a week later. I mean, is there anything you can share with us about what you've seen so far? And again, it's a couple of weeks, but
yeah, it's early days. Only a couple of weeks with College and Pro out. TSG put a press release out this morning, saying that they were just over the moon about how well Fox Bet is doing in those two markets. They've got a better view of it than we ever would, given their experience around the world. So I'd say early days from the expert standpoint is that things are looking encouraging.
Okay, great. Let's shift gears a little bit and talk about affiliate revenue. Across both cable and broadcast, it's half of your revenue. As you guys have disclosed, 69% of that revenue is up for renewal over the next 2 fiscal years, inclusive of this one that we're in. Can you just talk about what you see as the near-term outlook for the affiliate revenue growth?
I'm glad you asked this.
Yeah, you never get that question.
No. But actually, there's just so much talk about this topic that it's worth going back to the simplification theme. It's worth just bifurcate two issues that exist inside of it. And the first is, there are two inputs for our, pretty simple, for our affiliate revenue: price and volume. And in the case of price, that's something we control. We control the decision, right? We decide we want to move forward with the price that has been negotiated between the parties, or do we want to hold back and say, for our shareholders, for our business, that's not the right price. We have very quietly done a good number of deals against that 69%, where we've clearly met our expectations on price, because if we didn't, there'd be noise about it, right? There'd be a blackout or something else. The summer's been filled with them, as we know. So I think on the price side, you know, we're in the middle of other negotiations right now. They always start tense. Eventually, there's a middle ground, but always achieving our expectations and obviously achieving the expectations of the counterparty. All right? The place we don't control is volume, the second thing. We're reliant entirely on distributors for volume, our, you know, 75-80 million subs that we get paid for every month. But to be a bit more granular about it recently, I know in the last couple of weeks, one distributor, AT&T, has commented about the erosion that they experienced and that they continue to experience in the quarter and maybe beyond. Now, if you look, which of course we do, month by month, AT&T accounts for 25% of our volume. Yet, over the last several quarters, trailing 12 months, they've accounted for 75% of the decline in our subs. So 25% market share, accounting for 75% of the sub decline overall. So this picture gets painted of this massive erosion, massive cord cutting, when you really can localize it to some of the initiatives that AT&T is going. Said differently, if I took AT&T out of the mix, the rest of our 75% is down 1.5 to 2%, generally in line with most people's expectations. Look, we're hopeful that the AT&T sub base stabilizes. I'm really hopeful that some of that churn finds its way to other products in AT&T or other platforms. But for the moment, and you'll see it this quarter from everybody, and hopefully not as much next quarter, we're all focused on this one issue with this one provider.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, the macro point is, for the outlook, I feel real good about price. I just am looking for some stability around volume.
Yeah, I appreciate all those data points. It's very helpful to understand it a little bit better. I mean, the other thing that we've noticed, and tell me if you're seeing something differently, is that the virtual MVPDs as a collective group, at least in the second quarter, seemed to slow fairly significantly. Still positive, still growing. It's good to see. But more like 100,000 versus, you know, say 500 in prior quarters trailing. I'd be interested to understand what you think is happening there. Do you think it's the recent price increases? Is it a lull in the sports calendar? Is it some combination of the two? Or, you know, how are you guys thinking about it?
I think there's two categories. One, you know, I come back to DirecTV Now turned to AT&T Now. Some changes in the packaging, the pricing there. That's clearly was an issue with their rate of change in the period. And I do believe a lot of it relates to the pricing increase that happened during the period. That'll settle. Subscribers will determine, will they pay $45 for the skinny bundle, for example, that YouTube has. But I think a lot of it is that the price points and the offering had changed during that period. Hopefully we see, again, more rapid increase to those subs going forward.
Okay. You've said that apart from Fox Nation, you don't see a near-term meaningful opportunity for a Fox-only, you know, DTC service. Relative to your peers, that's a little bit of a different point of view and strategy. Can you talk a little bit about how you're looking at DTC?
Yeah, I don't want you to take away from this that we're Luddites as it relates to digital, and that we've got Fox Nation. We talked about Fox Bet, Credible, Pay-Per-View, Fox Sports Go. Foxnews.com, one of the biggest engaged audiences in the country. So from a digital standpoint, we're very active. What I have said in the past, and I believe in the near term still, that our channels will primarily be distributed in a bundled fashion. Bundle won't be the same as it's traditionally been. It will be smaller, much like what the over-the-top guys are providing. But for the near term, the 75-80 million subs that we get paid for every month are still going to consume in a bundle. Now, it's not that we then have our head in the sand and say, "Oh, God, I hope this doesn't change." One of the things we acquired or kept in the Disney deal was all of the technology around direct-to-consumer, because we had been building it for a more complete suite of products and library that we had in the 21CF days. All right? What we don't have in the Fox world is a library. Our shareholders got paid richly for selling that library over to Disney. So if, in fact, consumer behavior changes more rapidly, where they want to buy every single product direct, or even more so, which I'm not sure this will happen dramatically, quickly, if providers, distributors de-emphasize video, all right, we're ready. We're ready to deploy. We've kept that technology current and to move forward. I just don't see today deploying that capital to get the kind of return when I have 80 million subscribers in a bundled universe. All right? And the risk of breaking that universe for me, the risks are very significant.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, because I think investors are quite concerned about this de-emphasis of video point that you alluded to. I mean, you mentioned AT&T. It seems clear that that's what they're doing at the moment. It could change, maybe. And I think to many people's ears, Comcast as well, you know, is talking about broadband first. The announcement that we chatted about with Flex, you know, being offered. You know, but as you look at your various partnerships with distributors, you know, do you kind of agree with that, in a broad sense? You know, do you think we're hitting some type of inflection where, you know, they really are pulling back? They seem more focused on profit per sub or profit, even better yet, profit per relationship. And video seems to be kind of falling back, and they're not offering as much promotions and to retain subs, which I think they've kind of learned the hard way. Those promotions don't necessarily pan out. I mean, you broadly agree with that?
I have two observations, one current and then longer term.
Forward.
Currently, our relationships with the providers are as robust as they've always been, so they continue to acquire our product. I haven't seen a real de-emphasis of video by all of them, although I did note some comments that were given to you during the conference. But yeah, I can see a world in the future, not the near term, but in the future, where cable operators don't provide video, right? They're your utility providing broadband, and they've left it to another bundler, right? Those vMVPDs that have emerged make all the sense in the world to me, where the provider can say, "Look, I'm providing you broadband telephony. Get your video somewhere else, but I've got the pipe that will support anything you want to buy." The real question for me is in an American household, like, what the wallet difference is.
Mm-hmm.
Before and after, right? Because you get a quad play offer out of a cable operator, you pull out the video, get it somewhere else. I don't know where that price goes, and yet you're paying a new price for your video. So I'm not sure the household ends up in a better place, but I'm sure the cable operator feels that they're in a better place. So long term, yeah, I could see a world where cable operators are not providing video directly.
Yeah. And relative to the assets that you guys have, I mean, it's probably an easier pivot or transition, evolution, revolution, whatever it ends up being, given your strong presence in live news, live sports, entertainment, Fox brand.
Yeah, I think so, because I do believe, again, not as a Luddite, but I do believe that there will be bundlers who will take the best programming in the country, which will, of course, include all the networks, has to include most of the news services, and some of the sports services, and that product's going to be a bundled product.
Yeah.
You know, the rest will be, there'll be a lot of D2C happening, a lot of sampling where people will go, but there will still be a core, smaller bundle that likely will be offered over the top.
Yeah. I want to get a question in about reverse comp, reverse retrans. You know, we've seen the independent broadcasters, they've been consolidating for several years now. Looks like NextStar Tribune's basically a done deal at this point. You know, the part of the reason they're doing this is to get greater scale when they're negotiating with you for reverse comp. Can you talk about how you're thinking about reverse comp growth over the next couple of years and where you see those revenue splits, if you will, headed over the next couple of years?
So, untethered from the assets we had with 21CF, probably the biggest growth opportunity in our asset mix is coming out of the pot of broadcast television revenue, affiliate revenue, broken down between what we own, O&O, and then our reverse comp, as you refer to it. I think there's significant room for growth directly and through reverse comp. You take NextStar Tribune as an example. In connection with their announcement earlier this week, I guess, of FCC approval, we also announced a long-term affiliate deal covering their 39 Fox stations, which is 15% of the country. All right? So we like to think, if people like NextStar, Sinclair, others were reporting their station group by affiliate, the Fox stations would be their most profitable by far. It just, being an owner of a Fox station is always more profitable. First, we deliver an incredible amount of sports to them as a promotional tool, basically now Thursday through Sunday, and only 2 hours of really focused prime time. The rest of the time is theirs. And so we don't have a morning block. We don't have a late-night block that the network takes and only gives them a bit. It's entirely theirs, and it's mostly most of the programming around that is news. Cheaper product, but great advertising that comes out of it. So in discussions that we have around reverse comp, our partners know the value of Fox Network versus the other ones they have. I feel real good about both what we'll get from direct retrans and our share of reverse comp growing over time.
Almost sounds like you feel like there's a price umbrella of sorts for your reverse relative to maybe some of the other networks. I mean, is that kind of.
Meaning a ceiling?
No, that the other networks are sort of higher priced to the affiliates, and you guys are riding beneath that. There's plenty of room for you to grow.
Yeah, I think there's plenty of room to grow because of my earlier comment, which is Fox is now on its own. We don't have the RSNs. We're not launching other networks like FXX or FS2 and other Nat Geo Wild. We're on our own. And as a result, we really just want full value for what we have now.
Yeah. Let's move to advertising, which is the other half of your revenue, as you mentioned earlier. U.S. TV advertising demand has been strong all year long. Goes back to a pretty strong upfront last year. Scatter this past upfront was also fairly strong for you and others. There's a lot going on in the global economy. Even here in the U.S., we've got slowing manufacturing, but the consumer has been quite strong. Can you just give us an update on what you're seeing in the current advertising market?
Yeah, I don't think there's a but or a however in advertising right now. It's just very strong.
Mm-hmm.
And that's both on a national and local level. We had a great upfront. I think the industry did. I know we did in particular, both pricing and volume. Volume was up from the traditional players, pharma, finance, beverage, all the big categories. Retail is always a bit iffy as to where they're headed, but overall, price and volume up strong. What we've seen, and one of the benefits in the upfront, was emerging categories led by digital coming to the upfront. So you've got tech companies using broadcast television to really promote their new in-home products, speakers, thermostats, these security cameras. All of these are now new products, big spending that's entering the market, and they're using broadcast television to promote those products. For us, entertainment was up solid double digits. News and sports up mid to high single. So both of those, you know, really worked out well. And on the local side, what we've seen is continue to see strength coming out of finance and domestic auto. Now, the GM strike on, we haven't seen an effect of it yet. It's something probably all of us are watching, but there continues to be strength there. And scatter on a national basis is up yet again from this upfront. Forget about from the prior upfront, but from this upfront. So you probably heard this throughout, but it's a really healthy advertising market for broadcast television and for us at Fox News.
You're right. It's been pretty consistent across the board. The U.S. ad market, television, even other parts, billboards, outdoor. Yeah, it seems quite strong. I think the thing investors are asking is, we've also heard that places out like China, UK, you know, Latin America, and so there's sort of this picture of weakness everywhere but here.
I don't care anymore.
Yeah, you don't care. That's right. But it also begs the question, can this persist, right? Can the U.S. ad market sort of continue?
I know, if you look at, it's a question of what indicators you look at, but generally, the U.S. economy is in great health. There are some pockets that are issue, retail in particular, some issues, but throughout, if we look at the categories that support us, they're feeling pretty good about the U.S. economy.
Yeah, I tend to think if the U.S. consumer remains healthy, that's probably the...
Exactly right.
Yeah. Slightly different topic, but still on advertising. You guys recently disclosed that you actually have $500 million in digital advertising. That's 10% of the total. Maybe you could break that down a little bit for us and help us understand, you know, where is that coming from and what are sort of the drivers and the outlook for growth?
So obviously it's the digital services off of our core linear brands. It would be led by Fox News, and the Fox News Media digital suite of assets attract a highly engaged audience. It's not uncommon to have a Fox News viewer have the linear channel and the digital going at the same time. So a substantial amount of digital advertising is driven by Fox News digital apps. Fox Sports Go, Fox Now, or other places, and of course, digital revenue that we get from the digital MVPDs led by Hulu would be another category. And they all continue to grow.
Is there, you know, one of the artifacts of the separation is you no longer have a stake in Hulu. I wasn't sure if inside that 500, which was a number for last fiscal year, was there any sort of big component coming from Hulu that changes because maybe there's some change in the relationship with Hulu, or is that not a significant factor?
No, the relationship with Hulu, obviously, as an equity owner changed. Yep. We have renewals with Hulu consistent with the renewals we have with everyone else. The difference with Hulu is we license content to them next day. And, you know, there was a artifact coming out of the old deal that continues, and then we'll renew it when that expires.
So it sounds like that deal's still in place for the catch-up TV viewing.
Right.
And is that a fixed license, or is there some sort of ad revenue sharing?
I don't want to go into all of the details of it.
You can just print out the contract. very good. You know, coming out of the analyst day, let's move to a sort of different topic and sort of some of the cost components of the company. And coming out of the analyst day, I think some investors were surprised by the level of incremental investment in entertainment programming at the Fox network for this year. you know, 'cause at the Analyst Day, you did highlight some of the structural challenges that exist with ad-supported entertainment programming. You know, this investment is weighing on EBITDA in the television segment a bit this year. Maybe you could talk about sort of how you're thinking about the investment and what's going on, and also maybe speak to the longer term of what you think margins can look like for this television segment.
So if you reflect on just content, right? The entertainment side of our network and what it competes against. Today's front page of The Wall Street Journal has content being sold for $2 billion to providers. Apple announces a streaming service last week where one series is gonna cost them $300 million. We take heat for putting $100 million or so into the entertainment network. It doesn't make any sense to me. We're focused on dialing up the level of originality in the entertainment network because that's what we're competing against.
Mm-hmm.
Right? When you look at Peacock coming out and Apple streaming and what Netflix is talking about, that's what our entertainment division is competing against. So for us not to invest in originality comes back to the two legs I described earlier. It's gonna impact our advertising revenue. It's going to impact our affiliate revenue because the viewership is going to get impacted. Our network is a holistic network. It's not a sports network. It's a sports and entertainment network. And we're gonna invest in the brand and invest in originality with some of that really coming online already. But look, you just look at the dollars we're competing against. If we're able to create the kinds of returns that we expect out of this investment, we should all be cheering.
In terms of, like, the longer-term outlook for the margins, I mean, I think this year, according to our estimates anyway, we'll have a mid-single-digit margin. You know, this is down from mid-teens or low double digits a couple years ago. I mean, do you think that there's the opportunity to get back to that level, and how long might that take?
What's weighing the margins last year and this year are not the entertainment division, not these investments. It's our sports product. Thursday Night Football last year, first time. This year, WWE gets launched. Expansion of college football. So that will find probably its level by 2021.
Mm-hmm.
When both some of these retrans and clearly our advertising growth kicks in as well.
Right. That makes sense. The deal's kind of the high cost and multi-year deals.
Exactly.
Kind of takes time to leg into the revenue. Okay. Well, on that note of sports, I did wanna ask about the NFL renewal, you know, recognizing that your existing contracts do run through the 2022 season, but I think there's a pretty high expectation that the negotiation's likely to take place probably next year, as far as we understand it, assuming the CBA gets done. You know, how are you thinking about it? And I guess, do you think that the NFL is going to break the linear TV rights from the digital rights? And if you do, how do you position your bidding for that type of structure?
So at the outset, I'd say we have had no discussions with the NFL around a renewal. So therefore, I don't know what they're thinking. I think you have Brian Roll up here tomorrow, so.
I'll ask him.
You can ask him.
I'll report back.
Ask him what he's thinking, okay? But what I do know is those of you that attended the Investor Day would have heard Commissioner Goodell and separately Commissioner Manfred indicate that broadcast television is really important to them from a reach standpoint, and secondarily, that Fox has been an amazing partner for them. In the case of the NFL, it's been for 25 years that we've been the NFL on Fox. So our hope, our expectation is that after the 2023 Super Bowl, which is ours, we'll have an extended deal, and we'll begin that conversation whenever the NFL approaches the media partners. I assume they're gonna approach all of us at once around what the deal is. If you look at digital, the NFL has also said publicly that they're focused on reach and have referenced digital in the reach. The only data point I have is the existing partnership we have, which is Thursday Night Football. Amazon is the digital partner and distributes our production on Thursday night to its audience. If you take last year as a benchmark, 95%-96% of the viewing of a Thursday night game was on television. The other 4%-5% was on Amazon. So, you know, the NFL will decide the extent of its partnership with digital companies, but clearly, exclusivity, which is what we have on Sunday, I guess all of us have on Sunday, is a very valuable asset to us.
Yeah.
So we'll engage with the NFL once it's time for them to have that discussion.
Yeah. And there are some other sports rights deals that are currently up for bid, notably the PGA Tour and NHL, but you may not want to talk specifically about either one of those, although you're welcome to. But, you know, just in a general sense, what's sort of your appetite to add more sports to your portfolio, considering not just Fox Network, but Fox Sports 1 and 2, lest we forget those networks?
Yeah, because you can't forget those, because that's where the emphasis would be. I think on the network side, you know, given baseball, football, college football, NASCAR, FIFA rights, we have US Open. WWE-
Mm.
The edition on Fridays, we've got a pretty full schedule on the network side. FS1, you know, we had UFC, we don't anymore. We've added some basketball conferences like the Big East there. We were involved in the discussion to add NXT to FS1, but given some of our commitments to college basketball, we couldn't accommodate the date that WWE wanted for it. So we'd be, we continue to be interested in expanding product on FS1 and FS2, but not so much the network.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about capital allocation, balance sheet, cash flow, those sorts of things. You know, at the end of last quarter, you had $3.2 billion of cash on your balance sheet, net leverage 1.3x, annual free cash flow $1.8 billion. It's a lot of firepower, enviable position to be in.
Mm.
You know, how are you thinking about sort of when do you deploy it and how do you deploy it?
You know, the point I've made about this, probably in meetings even since the Investor Day, is, and really, I go back to the very first thing we talked about, is the dramatic change, right, going on in the industry, is you deploy capital over cycles, depending upon what's going on in that cycle, right? In a really dormant cycle, capital returns should be your emphasis, capital returns to shareholders. In a really active cycle, where you're trying to grow the business, then your emphasis is more organic or M&A. And we'll just continue to watch, you know, the right way to deploy capital in a disciplined manner over those cycles. I know, and we talked about it briefly, sidebar, there's been a lot of attention around the buyback authorization, which, you know, it reminded me of my kids in a car, a long hour, two-hour drive, and you say, "It'll take 2 hours," and then 9 minutes into it, "Well, when are we gonna get there?" So, "Well, it's gonna take 2 hours." Point we made at the Investor Day was by the AGM, no later than the AGM, the buyback authorization will be in place. But yet it's, when are you gonna get?
Yeah.
By the AGM, no later, the buyback authorization will be in place. And what takes so long is, first, the reality of a board operating in corporate America, and particularly a new board. And second, for us, this buyback authorization sets the ground rules. If you ever change it, the question then becomes, why are you changing it from what you established? So therefore, a lot of thought and emphasis has to go into what you establish. But you should not take away that the three legs of capital allocation for us, that there's one that's more important to another. They're important at different legs of a cycle, right? And therefore, capital returns. 2021 CF, we returned $16 billion of capital to the shareholders. Bought that stock, the remaining shareholders made a hell of a return in the Disney deal and the remaining Fox side. So capital returns in the form of buybacks and dividends are very important to us.
Yeah. I mean, one follow-up I have, you know, you guys at the Analyst Day talked about a minimum cash balance of $1.5 billion, which and you referenced this earlier, your capital needs, capital intensity, working capital, are fairly low. I guess that number struck me as a bit high, and I don't know, maybe you can explain why. I don't know if this is just out of maybe you want to run a bit more of a conservative balance sheet. Maybe it has something to do with where we are in the cycle. But I don't know if you could explain that a little bit.
I don't think it's in the cycle. I think it points to what has historically been the conservative nature of the way we run our balance sheet. I mean, we're really focused on maintaining an investment grade, and all these other elements of capital allocation feed into that, right? The organic M&A capital return, you need to ensure your credit rating is at a place where you can access capital if you want to. We're very focused on that. $1.5 billion has been about the level we've used for the last 6-7 years. We have cycles within a year of capital where first half, we're making all these sports payments. Second half, we harvest cash. So you should expect that that will be the level that we'll maintain as minimum cash.
Okay. We're out of time, John. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks.
Great discussion.
Appreciate it, Drew.